How has the process of healing been for you?
It's been a really long one, and I guess there's, at some point, there's a fragmentation that occurs that is irreversible and absolutely devastating. And as you enter into each of the levels of programming, your body remembers everything that was ever done to you. So physically, you're almost in whiplash sometimes when your body begins to remember the insertion of certain things, whether it was the doctor's penis or whether it was a fine metal wire. You begin to remember what it felt like when they turned the coil on when you were in the chamber. You begin to remember what you felt like when they put you in the chair and strapped down your hands and your ankles and put the electrodes on you. You begin to remember what it's like to be made to walk and function like a robot in a room where there were scientists looking down over the top of this small constructed room that they called the playhouse. And they told you to go in the playhouse. And as a child, you thought it was going to be a playhouse. And instead, it was just an experimental laboratory, sort of like a doll's house with no roof on the house. And they watched you, and they used their remote control devices, their electricity, to make you do what they wanted.
How did you begin remembering the memories of experimentation and torture? What was going on in your life at the time?
Well, I think things really began to break through at a time of personal crisis in my life. I know that many survivors have had the process of memory recovery begin sometimes a car accident or a physical trauma like that, a rape, or another kind of traumatic event started their process. But mine was being in an extremely abusive personal relationship with someone, and it ended up being the last of a series of degrading for myself interpersonal relationships, and I really just bottomed out and could not function, and some friends took me to get some help.
And was that when you were first introduced to the therapist that you've been working with?
Or? Yes, and neither she nor I were cognizant at the time of what was to come in the therapeutic process over the, you know, in the ensuing years. Things started off fairly simply and generically, in a sense. I began dealing with memories of different incidents with my father and uncle, some of my father's military friends. And then over time, I began having fragments of other more puzzling memories of being in hospital settings, memories of being in cages, electricity. And I guess it's important to emphasize that my process, which is similar to many other survivors, was a very fragmentary one. So I would get initially a glimpse of the setting, a glimpse of someone's face. But as I got the visual memory or the fragment of the memory, I would have intense body pain and I would be unable to speak. I couldn't tell my therapist what I was remembering or what was happening. So there was a very, very long and intense series of acting things out for her. I was absolutely nonverbal, incapable of telling her what I was remembering. So there was a lot of abreacting and sometimes writing or drawing, sometimes hiding under her coffee table, wrapping myself up in her throw rug on the floor of her office, her room. Sometimes pinning myself against the wall or hiding in the corner, using the electrical outlet on the wall, and pretending to put my fingers into it to somehow transmit to her that there was electrical currents coming into my body.
And when you say aberacting, that means to be reliving that
yes.
experience once again.
Yeah. In that process, your body literally takes on the position that you found yourself in, or you will intensely feel the pain in certain parts of your body as if it were taking place right at that minute again.
And this seems to be the nature of remembering traumatic experience. In that it does come back more like a body memory, and a lot of survivors have said they have felt the actual pain or the physical effects of what had been done to them. The actual marks on the body had reappeared during remembering.
Yeah, and I didn't have any of that happening, but I did find myself in physical positions that would be absolutely. I would be incapable of putting myself into. In my everyday existence, it's really hard to describe. I guess the contortions that my body went into and the spasms. I literally would have spasms as my body remembered the electricity. I can remember another time sitting there and pounding my legs as if I was going to break the bones in my legs with strength that I have never experienced again in my day-to-day existence. So the therapeutic process is a long one for those very reasons. It's extremely wearing physically. To be able to allow yourself in the safety of your therapist's office to try and somehow convey to her what was done to you.
Now, how did your therapist go about conducting the sessions with you?
She was very, very good right from the very start. I honestly didn't know what was going on. I was finding myself collapsing out in the street, finding myself phoning hospitals because I was reliving memories of being in hospitals, and I had programming that was telling me to go back to the hospital. I, at certain points, used to beg her to send me to a hypnotist in Toronto or in Ottawa, wherever there a competent hypnotist would be. And she really gently sort of didn't dissuade me from it, because all the decisions that I made were my own and continue to be my own. But she was also very frank and said that she didn't think hypnosis would be a good idea based on the intensity of the physical reactions that I was having to bring the memories forward, that hypnosis might be more than literally my body could handle if I was going to be overwhelmed and flooded by hypnosis with a huge quantity of memories. It would literally be really hard on my body. What she recommended was that we just go really slowly so that I was able to deal with things just a bit at a time, one step at a time, and that my body, my psyche, my spirit, myself was able to process and begin to understand how the different memories were actually linked together. she has also been very kind and very careful to never give me any information in writing or any spoken information. The relationship that I've had with her has been one of her acting as my witness, as a person in whom I've been able to, for the first time in my life, establish a relationship of trust. It has never been my experience where she was giving me articles or books. She has never once said, this sounds like or this may be. It has been, and it still is, very much the relationship outlined by Judith Lewis Herman, the trauma specialist at Harvard University, where the most important thing that a survivor of any childhood trauma, the most important thing that they need is someone to be a confidential and respectful witness to the story that needs to be told by that person.
So she never used hypnosis or drugs on you in the sessions?
Nothing. And because she was able to go slowly and carefully and respectfully with me, I was able to avoid any psychiatric intervention. There were many, many times when I did want to literally erase myself from life and go into a psychiatric ward, go into a psychiatric hospital. I did want drugs to make what I was feeling and remembering easier to bear, but I never did do that. There were lots of times I wanted to drink or do drugs as well as a means of escaping the pain of remembering what was happening, and I never did do that either. And I give a lot of credit to her competency and her skill as a therapist, that I was able to continue in therapy, and I'm still in therapy today without having to escape into any artificial intervention or any destructive intervention, because I could have ended up being one of those recipients of electroshock. I could have ended up being one of those persons who were chemically lobotomized. There's certainly been an escalation in both of those things in the past few years in Ontario.
Absolutely. Now, when you started remembering the names of the doctors and places that the experimentation were you familiar at the time with the history of CIA mind control experiments through what had been published?
No, I had absolutely no knowledge of any of these experiments or any of this information at all. And I think it's really important to say something about how I remembered their names or how I remembered their places. It's not like a cartoon flash coming up in your mind, oh, that's Dr. So-and-so, or, oh, that's the place I was taken to. I have binders and binders and binders, my journals. I had when I started remembering things, and I'm going right back to remembering my father, my uncle, my father's military friends. When I started remembering the incest when I lived in Toronto on Mariah Street as a small child, and then in Hamilton up on the mountain, I wrote night after night after night. I had something I called my secret code writing as well that came at a certain time. And after a certain point, I found myself writing things that were not familiar to me at all. And there were names in there, Dr. Hamilton, Dr. Green, a man's name, King. These names would be Dr. Hendricks as well. I don't know who that is. I found myself writing down names and words and phrases that had absolutely no meaning to me at all. And it was quite a few years until some of the things that I had written began to have some meaning. And the fragmentary fashion in which I wrote these things down, too, they were not really intelligible. My handwriting would change as different parts of myself came forward to write things down. And that's how my drawings came as well. I ended up doing a series of drawings for 10 months, although I have never been able to draw more than a stick figure in my life. And once the drawings came through for that 10-month period, I was unable to draw again after that series of drawings came out. I don't know how to put into words I'm not sure how to put into words about how fragmented the therapeutic or the memory process is. It's as fragmented as the fragmentation that was deliberately induced by these scientists, by these doctors, by these CIA-funded workers. When they put electricity on me, or when they put the electrodes on, or when they put the helmet on me, or when they put me in the different sensory deprivation containers, they were ensuring that what was being done to me at that time was being fragmented into a certain neural pathway. And so as the memories came, they came in a fragmented fashion as well. And this isn't like a light bulb going off in your head, oh, yes, now I remember. You go through years of getting little bits of information about the same event. And finally, you do get to the point where you can re-enter the hospital setting, you can re-enter the military setting, you can re-enter the pedophile setting after having spent years and years of an indescribable amount of physical and emotional pain as the fragments leaked through.
And did you visit these places in an attempt to verify your memories in terms of validating the existence of the places themselves and the people that?
No, and I live in Thunder Bay, and I have been on welfare for on and off for 17 years. I'm on disability now. I do my laundry in a bucket. I go to food banks sometimes, or certainly have done. I don't travel anywhere. My big dream, my biggest wish would be that I could go to Upper State New York, that I could go to Oswego, that I could go to Rochester, that I could go to Hamilton, New York, to Colgate College. I want to go to Annapolis, Maryland. I want to go with someone that I trust, and I want to take a video camera, and I want to go back to these places because I know that I have a voice or voices inside me that are going to be able to describe really accurately what was done when I visit the places. I have been able now in the past year to find some photographs of sites. I was given a yearbook from the Oswego State Teachers College from the 50s, and I was able to identify, without the names, the two psychologists in the psychology department there who were involved. And there is one location in one of the buildings. I know that was one of the places where I was taken. I've gathered lots of information in the past year, and I can certainly verify some things, but I would give anything to be able to physically go back to those places and take this process to the next level.
When did you start finding out that what happened to you may have been part of the CIA and U.S. government military's experimental programs? How did that realization take place?
It was actually on New Year's Day. It would be New Year's Day 1995. A friend had given me a computer, and another friend gave me a modem so I could get on internet, and another friend gave me a year's hookup to internet so that I could begin contacting other people or finding information. And at 11 o'clock at night on New Year's Day, I, by accident, found a speech that Walter Boert had given. I think it would have been in 1994 or 1995. Walter Boert's speech mentioned something about funding at University of Rochester, and it was Navy funding, and it was something called Project Chatter in 1952. And I literally went into shock at the computer. My daughter and her boyfriend were both there, and apparently I went into spasm, and my daughter's boyfriend was going to call an ambulance. My reaction to reading those words was apparently really, really strong. And what had happened was I had a drawing, and it was a child with a helmet on that I had done, and I had written chatter underneath it. There were actually a series of drawings about these helmets and the sound programming that we were made to endure. And I felt very, very alone with all of this. I thought I was crazy, to be honest, for a long time. And here I am sitting there reading Project Chatter, Navy funding, 1952. And then following that, someone gave me some information that Valerie Wolf and Claudia Mullen and Christy Nicola had testified in Washington. And when I read that, that was a huge turning point, because everything, especially that Claudia Mullen said, I had remembered you and Cameron. The cages, the electricity, Chris talked about the spinning table. I'd already remembered and gone through that. There were so many similarities, and particularly with Claudia's testimony, that was a huge turning point. And I did phone Valerie Wolf, and I got her address. And when I realized that she was Canadian and had gone to the Tim McMaster University in Hamilton, where I grew up, that was another sort of curious, synchronicity. Mm-hmm. I did send my drawings to Valerie, and I asked her if she would, in New Orleans, and I asked her if she would just take a look at them and see if anything that I had drawn was similar to anything she had been told by her clients. And she phoned back to say that Claudia Mullen had looked at my drawings, and Claudia was actually able to identify the doctor's portraits that I had drawn. And I can't put names to these portraits. And Claudia and Valerie won't tell me the names because they don't want to contaminate my memory process. And I actually didn't even show the drawings to my therapist for about 10 months after I had finished most of them. I felt I had no conscious connection to these drawings at all, and I finally just went into her office one day and really dismissively sort of tossed this stack of drawings to her and said, you might find some of these interesting. It was the only time I had ever seen sort of emotional reaction on her face. I think she was really, really shocked at what she saw. And but again, she was really respectful, and that part of me that was ready to sort of hand over the drawings to her. There was a lot of pain and a lot of work ahead of me in terms of having to go through more abreactive process about these drawings that I consciously had nothing to do with. It's a very, very complicated, process, this memory retrieval. And I don't think I'll ever live very validation in my journals or everything that's in my drawings. And I would imagine most of the files that my drawings are referring to around 1952 up to about 55, 56, I would imagine most of those CIA files are among the ones that were destroyed, because those drawings are very damning indeed.
They're extremely moving to look at and depict such horrific experimentation. Lynn, can you tell us what some of the recent activities of AIX-MC has been?
A group of survivors and advocates and professionals were able to meet at the Believe the Children conference in Chicago in April of this year. And at that time, we began documenting statements from survivors and the professionals involved on videotape. And we have now sent a video letter to President Clinton with a copy to Prime Minister Chrétien, asking for a presidential hearing and the declassification of government records relating to mind control experiments conducted on unwitting children and adults and funded by the United States government through the CIA from the 1940s onward. So that video document is now in their hands, and we haven't heard anything back at this point in time. Basically, we're now lobbying and pressuring for formal hearing to begin on the mind control experimentation.
And what sort of form of hearings do you envision or you would like to see? Or what are the possibilities of different types of hearings?
Yeah, I'm not entirely familiar with how the process for the human radiation experiments was conducted in the United States. I understand that there were traveling hearings, though, that would be similar to other commissions that have been conducted in Canada and in the United States. I'm assuming that the traveling hearing process would be the most accessible and the most productive, that if a committee can be constructed, and if they can go to different centers in the United States and then again to different major centers in Canada, that it would then become possible for survivors and for their therapists and other persons involved to be able to attend the hearings and present their information. And I would certainly assume that there would be some travel monies made available to survivors so that they would be able to attend and present. But I am certainly hoping that there's going to be a North American hearing ultimately, and that the Canadian survivors who've been affected by the CIA experiments are going to have an opportunity to present their histories as fully as possible.
I want to thank you very much, Lynn, for speaking with us here at CKLN. I know it takes incredible courage in speaking out, more than any of our listeners can imagine.
It's a struggle. I want to thank you too, on behalf of survivors and people working in the field, for what you've taken on. No one else has done it, so I really want to thank you.
We've been listening to an interview with Lynn Moss-Sharman, the coordinator of the Advocacy Committee for Human Experimentation Survivors of Mind Control. And to support AIX-MC current campaign for a call for government investigations into mind control experimentation on children and adults, you can send your letters of support to Prime Minister Chrétien and President Clinton. I'd like to quickly make a couple of announcements about upcoming conferences regarding these issues. From October 1st to 3rd in Atlanta, Georgia, there will be a conference about ritual trauma, child abuse, and mind control. For more information, you can call 864-592-9326. Also, from October 3rd to 5th in Elliott Lake, Ontario, there is a healing gathering for sexual and spiritual abuse survivors. And for more information of that one, you can call area code 705-848-2774. You've been listening to The International Connection here on CKLN 88.1. Stay tuned. Key in Western America coming up next.